Welcome to your own health and fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman. I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. About 2 weeks ago or so, I was listening to our large local NPR affiliate, and I heard an interview with a panel of experts discussing some research that was reported on in the New Yorker magazine on March 13th. The article is primarily by Malcolm Gladwell. He's discussing the ideas of a Dr. Malcolm Pike. Basically, the idea is that if you interrupt women's menstrual cycles and cause them to stop for periods of time, and then and to intervene with the use of very strong hormone blocking chemicals, and then reintroduce synthetic chemicals at a low dose, that this will protect women from breast cancer. Well, needless to say, I was really alarmed, and I ended up calling into the show and giving them sort of a piece of my mind. But it occurred to me that the best defense against this type of information, confusing and frightening people, is to do a show about this. So today we're going to discuss breast cancer and menstruation, and my two guests are Dr. John Lee and Dr. David Zava. So I'm going to introduce each guest and get them on the line here. Dr. John Lee is a physician with over 30 years of practice in Mill Valley. He's now retired from his medical practice, but continues to write and speak on the subject of hormone balances, imbalances and balancing hormones. He has written several books on the use of natural progesterone and on hormone balancing hormones before and during menopause. You may be familiar with his book, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause and What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Premenopause, both published by Warner Books. Let me see if I've got John on the line. Are you there?
Howdy.
Hi again. And let me just quickly get David on the line as well. Dr. David Zava, PhD in endocrinologic biochemist, is a 20-year breast cancer researcher. He is the owner and scientific director of Z, as in Zebra, RT Laboratories in Beaverton, Oregon, which is right next door to Portland. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you very much, both of you, for making yourselves available. You know, we might want to just start, John, with your critique of the article that was published in the New Yorker magazine on March 13th. First of all, what I'd like you to do is maybe go ahead and, rather than have me frame this, have you explain what Malcolm Pike and Brian Henderson are up to. And, you know, I'm also wondering what you're going to do with your critique. Have you decided? Are you going to send it into the New Yorker?
Oh, I think I probably will. I don't know if it'll do any good. But, you know, what they're talking about is probably the worst idea I've heard of since the Salem witch trial
in
colonial times. It's an attack on women, and their argument is that in olden times when women didn't live very long and were pregnant all the time, they had fewer total menstrual cycles throughout their life than we do now, and therefore they conclude that our breast cancer epidemic we have is due to the fact that the women are having more cycles. And of course, the glaring defect in the argument is that the breast cancer is related to hormones, but if people have proper hormone balance, they can have as many cycles as they want, and no matter how long they live, and it won't cause cancer. And if they have bad hormone balance, they're going to get the breast cancer.
I'd like us to actually go over what they're saying, and the reason is because it sits right next to, you know, I have to do an aside here. An aside is that I called the NPR station and I said, how could you do that show without a strong opposition to your point? And the producer called me back and left me a voicemail message saying that the reason that she didn't put Dr. Lee on the air was because he's a man, and she already had another man on the air, and she felt like two men and a woman talking about women's health problems was a problem. Now, I have to say, I have two men on the air, and just me interviewing them, and I don't have a problem with this, because these are two people who have done the research and are promoting extremely prudent and careful and scientifically correct interventions, if you can even call them that, for women. So,
well, I find it grotesque that they want to go out and castrate women chemically, and then substitute the synthetic hormones. They must assume that the synthetic hormones, such as in birth control pills or something, are good for people, or somehow fit the same bill as the natural hormones. And everybody who looks into these things finds that hormones work because of their specific molecular configuration, and if you alter that by one atom, you change the function, and the synthetic progestins do not have the same function as the real progesterone.
Well, and this explains why we're seeing, forgive the use of this word, proliferation of articles on that progestins are not a good thing to take and that women should take unopposed estrogen and not take estrogen at all, maybe, and this and this and this. Well, I've done some editorials about it, but what we're saying here is that you can't patent a natural substance. So, John, what do they do?
Well, they create the chemical drugs that mimic the hormone, and it may have some effect that may be similar to the hormone. But progesterone has receptors throughout the whole body, the brain, the muscles, the white cells, the bones, the breast, all the pelvic organs and so on. And the function of these progestins is different. And it's also, you can say, toxic, because lacking the real hormone, all sorts of bad things will happen. I think David would concur with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the synthetic progestins are kind of like what saccharin is to glucose.
Sure.
Well, in addition, one of the reasons I think we might want to go back through this article and really cover the details is because some of the things that he's discovered are being bantied around and women are frightened about it. The main premise here is that, you know, it sort of starts out with the idea that women who don't have children or don't get pregnant early are more susceptible to breast cancer. Well, in a way, there is a way in which this might be true. Is that not so, David?
Well, that's what the epidemiology tells us, is that women who haven't given birth to a baby before about the age of 20 are going to be at about a twofold increased risk of developing breast cancer later on in their life. The problem today is that this window of being exposed to what I'd call sort of unopposed hormones, and that's estrogen without progesterone, is beginning to expand because girls are getting reaching puberty much earlier than they did 50, 100 years ago. And so their window of vulnerability is greater. The breast tissue itself, when you're born and you're developing after birth, it's got cells in it that are potentially more vulnerable to damage by chemicals, viruses, radiation, and things like that. And they become very vulnerable at a time of beginning at about puberty. They're very susceptible to damage. Anytime cells start dividing, and that's what happens in the breast, you can increase risk. And that's basically what Pike and colleagues are saying, and that's correct. But the problem with it is that they're also blaming progesterone, and progesterone is not to be blamed in this. Progesterone does temporarily increase the rate at which cells divide, but it causes them to differentiate, and it preserves and protects the breast. And as I was telling John today, that it's like a tree that begins to leave. Those leaves form on a tree. They can't do anything other than die, and that's what those progesterone-regulated breast cells are doing once they differentiate. So the breast is protected by the progesterone that's being produced. They're saying that because progesterone increases the rate at which cells divide, that that's damaging, and then they go on with their hypothesis, well, we have to stop this. We have to turn all the hormones off with a brain agonist, and then turn them back on the way we think they should be turned on.
Okay.
Well, the problem with that...
Wait. Let me just unpack what you just said before, though, before we go to the problem, if that's okay.
Okay.
Part of what we're saying here is that researchers have found that when women begin to procreate very early in their lives, these early pregnancies like we had in the wild, starting maybe at just at puberty, right? You know, where girls and women are having children in their teens, that early pregnancy is protective of the breast tissues. However, what I think I understood you saying in your critique, David, of this article as well, is that that isn't so. Just, in other words, the idea that if you just create a pregnancy-like condition of there being no menstrual cycles, that later doesn't seem to be protective. What's protective is the pregnancy early on. Is that correct?
Well, the hormones of pregnancy are protective. Both estriol and progesterone cause a maturation of these vulnerable, what they call stem cells, undifferentiated cells in the breast, so that they no longer are susceptible to damage caused by chemicals and viruses and other things. So that occurs if you're pregnant early. That that occurs very early, and that's why women who are get pregnant before the age of 20 are going to have about a twofold lower risk. That's not practical in our society.
No, it isn't practical. In addition to that, what we're really trying to separate here is we're talking about a situation with menstrual cycles where women's estrogen level goes up, and what they're saying is that causes cell proliferation, so that's got to be stopped. In fact, isn't it so that stopping them, now we go to what you're about to cut, stopping them with synthetic hormones and then putting them on something like birth control pills or even anything sort of akin to that is dangerous? I mean, is not using birth control pills, one of the,
right.
Although, let me, here's where it's confusing. The confusion here is, are we talking about menstrual cycles with or without ovulation, too? That's the other thing that gets complicated here, no?
That's correct.
Okay, so can somebody, John, or somebody explain that whole thing?
Well, I just wanted to say, to begin with, that the treatment they recommend is obviously going to be worse than the disease that they think they're treating.
And how?
And but we do have a problem in that at the turn of the century, women didn't go through puberty and start menstruating, on average, till they were about 16 years old in North America, and now it's down to around 11 or 12. So there must be a reason for that. This is not simple evolution, and what we have to do is learn the causes of why these children are going into puberty so early, and we think we know a lot of the causes, and they can be addressed because the same thing that causes that is very likely xenobiotics, you know, xenohormones.
Pesticides and whatnot.
Pesticides and whatnot that have contaminated our environment. It causes it in test animals, and it's causing it in people. And the high sugar intake that the kids are eating. Kids eat almost a pound of sugar a day. And at the turn of the century, the sales of sugar averaged out to 2 pounds per year.
Yeah, high sugar, high starch diet leads
to high sugar, high starch diet. And the effect that happened to them primarily when they were in their embryo stage during when their mother was pregnant with them alters the function of the ovaries of the girls when they grow up, and it alters the testes of the boys when they grow up. So we have, for instance, men making only half the amount of sperm by age 40 that their grandfathers did, and we have these girls starting their periods very early and running out of progesterone, so they become what I call estrogen dominant, and it's estrogen that's driving the growth of these cells to become cancer cells.
Mm-hmm. Now, putting young women, there's a problem, David, as I understand it, with putting very young women on birth control pills.
Yeah,
because of the anovulatory cycle.
The studies that came out of Sweden, you know, they have a special medical system there where they monitor everyone, and they were one of the first countries to use the
birth control
synthetic progestins and birth control pills, and what they found after about 20 years is that it was the young women that were developing breast cancer, and use of birth control pills in these young women increased the risk of developing premenopausal breast cancer by about sixfold, and the younger you use it, the greater your risk, and that's that window that I was talking about of vulnerability. Once you're up to 20 or 30, the risk continues to decrease because you have fewer of those cells that are vulnerable to the insults. And those birth control pills are basically, you know, they're estrogenic in their own right, and they're potentially damaging. So the problem is that young women are starting their puberty earlier and menses early, so they're more likely to be using things like birth control pills. And now the companies are selling this stuff to help take care of acne, which is just amazing to me that that's how they're pushing these things, is to, because they will work, they will help to decrease acne, but they're going to very much increase risk of developing breast cancer later in life.
I think that the use of birth control pills in Sweden has declined very dramatically since these studies of theirs came out. It used to be that they encouraged it for school children to use, and now it's become everybody in the country understands that this is not a healthy thing to do.
Okay, so we're getting into how they propose to stop these menstrual cycles in women, and Pike et al. Decided that there was too much of what he called progestins, which is the synthetic progesterone, in the pills, and that they were going to be a breast cancer, they were going to cause breast cancer. David, did you write something in the margin here that I can't read about that?
Probably.
Not so.
That's complex. If you look at the clinical studies that have been done on synthetic progestins, that go both ways. What we know now with the most recent studies is that combination of both estrogen and synthetic progestins will increase the risk of breast cancer by, I don't know, John, how much is it? It's 40% lifetime.
It's more than that. It's considered to be 8% a year. Yeah. So in 8 years, it would be you'd be doubling your risk, to be 100% increase. And but also these birth control pills increase your risk of strokes, and they always have, and they keep coming out with new generations of birth control pills, and they find the same thing happens. It alters so many things in the body that it ends up in the blood. It ends up as causing strokes to occur.
Very quickly, this is Your Own Health and Fitness, and you're listening to a show about menstruation and breast cancer. I have two researchers and authors on the line. I have Dr. John Lee, author of several books about menopause and premenopause, published by Warner, John Lee, L-E-E, and Dr. David Zava, scientific director of Z, as in Zebra, RT Labs, and a breast cancer researcher, talking about this. All right, so birth control pills, what my concern also is that they appear to be androgenic. They appear to make young women have more male hormone stuff, and then that seems to spill over to more estrogen. So they actually end up being estrogen dominant again, ironically.
See, no one is denying that there's a problem that we have, but the problem isn't going to be treated by just emasculating all women.
Well, and that's exactly what they propose, is pharmaceutical.
And so if they have some intelligence to offer in this field, it would be to find out why the kids are going into puberty so early, and trying to correct the balance of their hormones rather than having them be subject to all these estrogen dominant factors.
I think, John, I'm sure you'll agree to a certain extent with this, that it's sugar, smoke, and lack of exercise.
Sure.
Okay, but let's go back to Pike's proposed solution, which is this group of pharmaceutical drugs. And why don't you explain what these drugs are, and where we also see them popping up, and why they are, in fact, causing more problems than solutions, aside from the fact that when you stop women's menstrual cycles, their periods, you know, stop and their bone mass disappears, little things like that, and they feel awful. But, you know, what drugs are we talking about here?
Well, I don't know that they were identified explicitly in the New Yorker article, but they're talking about the synthetic estrogens and progestins that are in birth control pills, but they're probably saying that they know how to use the right dose. But if anyone is interested, they can look in the physician's desk reference, the PDR, and just look at the side effects that are related to the use of these pills. It runs on for column after column.
But aren't we also talking about Lupron here?
Well, that's the initial thing they wanted to...
That's what I'm trying to talk about.
Yeah, Lupron, you consider it as a drug that turns off the production of all the hormones in your body. It turns off testosterone, it turns off the estrogen, turns off the progesterone, it stops the ovaries. From making any hormone whatsoever.
Yeah, the big problem with that is, first of all, is the Lupron or Lupron type of drugs. You can go to anybody that wants to go to the internet and just plug in, I did that this morning, Lupron, and survivors there is a Lupron survivor victim network that lists all of the side effects from taking that drug, and there are, you know, it's a who's who of adverse side effects.
How do you get into the website, David?
Well, I just plugged in Lupron, L-U-P-R-O-N,
okay,
and survivors, and for the website, and it brought me there. I found it real quick.
Then I was spelling Lupron wrong.
Yeah, that was the problem.
And you should realize that this is an injection you have to have every 3 months for life.
Right. You know, the biggest problem with Lupron is the problems with the brain. All what they said is that 100% of people taking that had hot flashes. The second thing is that, okay, you've shut all the hormones off with Lupron, which include all the estrogens, progesterone, all the androgens, and the problem is they're only talking about putting back two of the hormones, and that's a synthetic estrogen and a synthetic progestin.
Oops.
Now, problem with the synthetic progestin is that it doesn't do a lot of things that natural progesterone does. Natural progesterone, yes, it has functions through its own receptor, But it converts into other hormones. It converts into glucocorticoids like cortisol. It converts into a metabolite called allopregnanolone that goes to the brain and has a calming effect. That's why progesterone has a calming effect. Recent paper showing that those women that don't make enough of that allopregnanolone are more likely to have PMS. It has a direct effects on the cardiovascular system. There are just so many things that natural progesterone does that synthetic progestins don't do.
Well,
and
in fact,
they're talking about putting back a synthetic progestin in place of natural progesterone. They're going to shut it off. And then they're not even talking about replacing the anabolic hormones, and you're going to get muscle wasting. The androgens are good for the heart. They're good for your blood vascular system. They're good for your mood to make you feel good. So basically what they're going to do is they're going to flatline women in terms of their in terms of their moods.
All of the vitality,
yeah,
the libido,
exactly.
Everything gets gone. It's just
right.
It reminds me of about 5 or 6 years ago, they developed a drug called Flutamid, which completely blocks all testosterone receptors, and they thought it would be good to give to people who have prostate cancer because they have this theory that somehow testosterone makes prostate cancer grow, which I don't believe. But at any rate, they gave this drug to people, and it didn't lengthen their life at all. It didn't protect them from dying from prostate cancer. But what happened is they all got demented and depressed. Their brain cells do not work if they do not get sufficient testosterone.
Right.
Yeah, and in addition, estrogen, too. I mean, we're talking a lot about progesterone because, David, as you say, and I see this in people who come to me for consultations, that often what you'll see is that as John has said in his books many times, the progesterone drops before the estrogen drops. So they may have low estrogen levels, but their progesterone levels are really gone. So we do see estrogen dominance. But the estrogen itself is also valuable, too, and has tremendous effects on the brain.
Right.
And
I don't want people to think that I'm against estrogen. It's just that, for instance, a recent study in New England Journal of Medicine found that the typical prescription of estrogen by doctors is 10 times higher than the body's
need. Right.
And so you have all of these women being poorly treated and all becoming estrogen dominant, and they get their breast cancers a few years later. And nobody's tumbling to the fact that they've created the estrogen dominance that leads to this. So
We see this in saliva testing. I spoke with a woman yesterday who's had a complete hysterectomy, and her doctor is giving her unopposed estrogen, and her serum level of estrogen was like around 1,000. And they keep pushing it.
Yes,
it's not balanced with progesterone.
Well,
she's got all the side effects of estrogen dominance.
There was a woman that came to me that was in her 60s who had uncomfortable symptoms. She was actually almost 70. And they kept giving her things like testosterone and estrogen. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let's check your saliva and see what you are low in. And, of course, what happened is that she's actually, partially because I think that she had been a drinker, and that increases estrogen levels, had levels of estrogen that were almost, you know, high enough to be menstruating. She had fairly good estrogen levels, and no progesterone at all, and that was the problem. So part of what we're saying here is that nobody bothers to examine, and now we have these techniques like saliva testing, which gives you. Well, David, why is saliva? I'll let you do this. Why is saliva a good way to test instead of blood?
It's a good way to monitor your balance of all the hormones that your body's.
Why is it better than blood, David? In your opinion.
He's modest. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Tell him.
I'll tell you what.
Go ahead, John.
I tell the people who call me that the hormones float around in your bloodstream in two different forms. After the hormones have passed through the liver, liver generates protein, which is a binding protein that prepares them for excretion, for being metabolized and excreted out of the body. And those are not biologically active anymore. So when you do a simple blood test, like doctor's order, you're measuring all of this hormone that's no longer biologically active and is totally irrelevant to hormone function in the body. And the saliva test, on the other hand, measures the hormone which is not protein bound, is soluble in saliva, and is excreted, and gives a very accurate reflection of the actual amount of hormone that is biologically active. So that's the information that doctors need, and they're not getting that.
In addition, David, what David has told me is that the salivary gland is a filtrate for the blood.
It's a simple filtration, right.
So you're getting what's available to the tissues rather than what's floating around.
Right.
Okay, so just let's back up for a second. What we're saying here is that the thing that this theory is supposed to cure, which is like PMS, you know, oh, awful PMS women are suffering. Oh, they're going to get breast cancer. So the hormones are terrible, and they have to be controlled, and so we're going to knock the hormones out with Lupron, never mind the fact that Lupron causes bone loss, it's hard on the liver, you know, and then we're going to add these synthetic hormones, which don't do the job, and they're not balanced, and they're not, you know. So we've got a regular nightmare here. But what they're attempting to fix is something that people are worried about, which is A, women who decided not to have children. Uh-oh, I'm going to get breast cancer. The second one of, oh, gee, I have PMS, and so something must be wrong. Hormones must be bad. And what we're saying, I think, is that what we're really looking at with these symptoms and with the acceleration of breast cancer is an imbalance of hormones.
Right. And this is where their attention ought to be directed. If a woman decides not to have children, that's fine, but she should make sure that her hormone levels remain balanced. That is the proper amount of progesterone for the amount of estrogen she's making. Otherwise, she will be at a much higher risk. But it's not difficult to do that. I mean,
not anymore.
Yeah, you can manage the hormones that are normal and natural to the human body.
Yeah, and I did do a show on compounded hormones versus pharmaceutical hormones. Not that they're not made in a lab, but that they match the molecular structure.
Exactly.
Yeah, the biggest problem that I see in saliva testing for women today is that I think they're with all the chemicals in the environment, the ovaries are being damaged, and they're making less progesterone and a lot more of their own estrogen, as well as is taking in a lot of xenoestrogens from the environment, from petrochemical companies, and, you know, plastics and all that kind of stuff, pesticides and so on. So the body is, as John has well described in his books, is very estrogen dominant. We see that with symptoms, because we look at symptoms and they have fibrocystic breasts and PMS and all these different kinds of things. We look at hormone levels, and sure enough, you know, they're in a phase where they should be making lots of progesterone, and they have a ton of estrogen, and they have almost no progesterone being produced. That the ovaries are just not working the way they're supposed to work, and that's. It's epidemic today in society, and it's not anybody's fault. It's just because of the stress and the environment. And these chemicals get into the ovaries, and they destroy the ovaries' ability to produce natural progesterone.
Well, and stress interferes with the production of the ovaries as well, David. I mean, we were discussing somebody that came to me who's 22 years old who has this picture, and she's under a lot of stress, and she was eating a very high starch, very high sugar diet. So that combination. Now, John, you know my loyalty to you and how much I admire your work, and I put you on the air because I want people to hear you. There is one thing that people criticize you for, and that is that they get the impression from reading the books that everything is just fix it with progesterone and it'll be fine. Let me just do this one thing. What I'm seeing is that women, again, want it all to be simple. So they start slathering themselves with progesterone without maintaining a balance between the estrogen and the progesterone, and they get side effects.
Right. It's a big mistake. And I try to emphasize not only balance of the hormones, but also that you have a larger picture, which has to do with essential fatty acids, good nutrition, exercise, managing stress, all kinds of eating fresh, unprocessed vegetables, trying to eat organic. There's all of these things fit together. As David has found in his saliva test, that cortisol is a big factor in this, because stress makes more cortisol, and cortisol can actually blockade the progesterone from its receptors. And so it's a very complex picture.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman on the phone with Dr. David Zava, hormone saliva tester, scientific director of ZRT Labs, also breast cancer researcher, and Dr. John Lee, author of many books, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Menopause, and What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Pre-Menopause. menopause, both published and out by Warner Books. We are discussing breast cancer and menstruation, and we're just talking about the chemical castration of women supposedly helping them. Now, I think we've pretty much destroyed the theory that it's tied to menstruation and attached it to the idea that it's tied to hormone imbalances, and that women are... One of the problems with some of the research is that, as David said, they give a single dose. They do this research project. They give a single dose of hormones to everybody without even checking, you know, to see if a woman needs estrogen. They're already giving her estrogen, and that creates an imbalance, which causes problems. Now, we mentioned the dangers of Lupron, and we also, John, you also mentioned your own skepticism, and I share this with you, and I know Jonathan Wright shares this, and I know David does, of testosterone, if I can take a side trip, of testosterone being the problem with prostate cancer. Men are being put on Lupron, and I get calls all the time from men asking me what to do about this, and I'm really afraid to even answer. I mean, I know what my ideas are about it, but I don't know that I have enough research to make a suggestion. Do you want to hazard your opinions on this a little bit and talk about what to do if a man has said, well, you know, here's take this Lupron?
Well, I have, you know, I retired 11 years ago from my practice in Mill Valley, but a lot of my old patients call me, and they will call and say, well, they're now 65, they're now 70, and they've been found to have prostate cancer. And the first thing I do is explain to them that at that age, prostate cancer is usually a very slow-growing tumor and has a doubling time of about 5 years. So if they find a 3-millimeter lesion in their prostate, it'll not be 6 millimeters until 5 years later. So they have lots of time. And then I advise them on diet, of course, and I want them to take antioxidants because that's been found to be good, and I told them that it would be wise to take a progesterone and apply it in the small doses that is natural for men to use.
What would a dose of progesterone be for men?
About 8 to 10 or 12 milligrams a day, and they can do it, and there's nothing to it. So I said then they can always go back 6 months later, a year later, and see what's been happening to their so-called prostate cancer, this little cluster of irregular cells. Or they could have PSA levels, you know, the prostate-specific antigen. Well, there's a group of men now that have been doing this for over 10, 12 years now, and their prostate cancer hasn't grown.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even formed a prostate cancer luncheon association.
It's
in Marin County, and they talk about what's new. But also what has happened is there have been some good studies with prostate cancer cells where the hormone levels in the culture have been compared, and they find that estrogen causes the prostate cancer cells to grow very well, whereas both progesterone and testosterone not only slow the growth, they can bring it to a stop. And so I think we somehow we got off track with treating prostate cancer by accusing testosterone as the cause. I tell people if testosterone were the cause of prostate cancer, then guys 18 years old would be getting it, because that's when the testosterone level is so high. But no, it happens when we pass 50 or 60 and the testosterone is falling and the estrogen that we make. People don't realize that men make as much estrogen at age 55 or 60 as women do.
Right.
And women make, 70% of the women make enough estrogen for the body's needs, short of carrying a baby. So Mother Nature has done the right thing by us, but we're messing it up.
You know, that's really good advice. What I'm wondering is what you tell younger men who have been diagnosed with irregular cells, because it's much more aggressive in younger men,
yes.
Men in their 40s.
Right. I have had some calls from men in their 40s, one of them a doctor in the East Bay, who, as I recall, was a pediatrician, and he was horrified at the prospect of what treatments he was going to be faced with, and he made a serious study of all the alternative medicines, and he's chosen to go the alternative path, and it's been over 5 years now, and he's fine. So there's a whole lot that we should be learning about the effects of the proper nutritional components that the body needs to fight this cancer.
I just realized I forgot to mention to people that if you miss part of today's show and you want to get a tape of this or any other in the series, you can always call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-773-4700. 1-800-273-8527. John, are you saying that you don't mind people calling you? Because that's what people are hearing.
No, I love to talk to people. The problem is time. I get 20, 30 or more phone calls
at least
a day. And if you have 15 or 20 minutes at each one, you find the day passes and you never get anything done.
Okay, so we're not going to give out your phone number.
Okay,
are we?
Thank you.
Okay.
Have them read my books. What I
yeah,
tell
the
people
books.
Is what's in the book anyway.
David, why should men, even men in their 40s who are young, who may have an aggressive form of prostate cancer, be suspicious of Lupron?
Well, Lupron just basically shuts down hormone production, testosterone production. Testosterone is so essential for the health of the brain and the health of the cardiovascular system. And generating energy, I think you know, lose your lust for living when testosterone gets too low. And that's one of the big problems. There's no question that clinical studies show that when you reduce the testosterone that low, that it does tend to slow the growth of cancers as well as everything else in your body. The real problem is not testosterone, it's conversion of testosterone to too much of its metabolite called DHT, or dihydrotestosterone. And it seems from the literature that it's the combination of both too much estrogen and too much DHT that are stimulating the growth of the prostate cancer cells. I mean, it's more complex than that, but basically that's it. And the reason that's happening is because there's not enough progesterone present. Progesterone is a natural inhibitor of the conversion of testosterone to DHT, and it's a natural inhibitor of the conversion of testosterone into estrogens. And in men, as we get older, we tend to make more estrogen, so that's why we have more problems of benign prostatic hypertrophy. You wake up in the morning, you can't urinate because the urethra is clogged up. So as far as what I've seen in the literature, I think that's the problem. So a lot of it has to do with zinc deficiencies and selenium deficiencies, and those are two nutrients, minerals that are very important for prostate health. The omega-3 fatty acids are really important to help keep down the wrong kinds of oxidations that are going on in the prostate. So those are important things that Dr. Lee has mentioned in his nutrition books that are very good for the prostate. But and exercise and keeping your body forming good amounts of testosterone and the zinc. It's amazing. Probably 80% of the population is zinc deficient.
Additionally, what we're saying here again is that diet, exercise is important for maintaining muscle mass. But again, for men, a diet high in sugar and high in refined carbohydrates and alcohol will add to the amount of estrogens that a man has, will raise
right.
his cortisol levels and oppose his testosterone. Now, men do get low in testosterone. Jonathan Wright wrote a wonderful book called Male Vitality and Potency, which is published by Smart Publications, Male Vitality and Potency by Jonathan Wright. And he actually discusses the DHT, and he's even critical of that research and shows some other research that indicates, again, that it has more to do with the interruption by the estrogen levels getting high.
Right.
So even if you're not diagnosed with
DHT by itself is not
right,
harmful.
Exactly.
It's the combination of the high DHT and high estrogen.
That's right.
That becomes harmful.
I was at a seminar this last week, and a doctor talked to me about his own personal problems. He's now 65. Hasn't had an erection in 5 or 6 years, and he has terrible prostate symptoms. He has to get up every 2 hours at night to urinate, and he went to his friend, a doctor, who he has always respected very much, and the friend had him get a serum testosterone level and was told that, well, he's in the normal range, and it couldn't be his hormones.
Oops. Yeah, you do a test. You do a saliva test, and you'll see it low.
Oh,
I see it all the time. All
right.
the time. And I do think that men should use very tiny amounts
sure.
of natural testosterone cream. The problem is, again, that doctors overprescribe, not you, John, but other doctors tend to overprescribe hormones. So I've seen men come in whose testosterone levels were at a low normal, who were given through the skin 12 milligrams or even 50 milligrams of testosterone. And then you see their testosterone levels go up to 20,000,
well, the
and
problem,
then it spills over to estrogen again.
Yeah, the problem with that, Lena, is the doctors are monitoring blood, and it just doesn't show in blood. If you look at saliva, you get some pretty enormous increases in the levels of that particular hormone you're using. So anytime you're delivering through the skin, the blood tests are just not accurate at all.
Yeah, the production of testosterone by healthy men in their middle age is only about 2 or 3 milligrams a day.
Yeah, I've seen that work beautifully, 2 or 3 milligrams.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
The whole point is to give the right amount.
Well, let's go back to women for a second, and let's just make sure that we've been clear about what we're saying. What we're saying is, don't worry, you can have as many menstrual cycles as you want, as long as you sort of monitor through your life your hormone ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so, and we're also saying synthetic hormones, bad,
right,
at the risk of sounding like the Frankenstein monster. Natural compounded hormones, good. We're saying diet, we're saying environmental pollution are issues here. Okay, and you guys are working on a book on breast cancer that's not going to be out immediately. Is it? When is that coming out? Is that a well-kept secret?
We've got so much material, we could probably have 2 books by this time.
We're working on it.
But the trick is to put it together in a package that will allow people, because it's going to change the whole brain, the mindset of people when they realize that much of what they think is true about breast cancer is not true at all. And it's an entirely different viewpoint, but it's backed by really sound science and lots of clinical experience in all of these tests that David's been doing.
John, did you see the article this morning about how too much vitamin C is bad for cancer patients?
Right. It was given to people who already had chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and they said that it may help the cancer cells survive the chemotherapy and the radiation therapy.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of attacks on antioxidants lately in the paper about how too many antioxidants and you're going to hurt yourself. You want to attack that?
I really haven't looked into that closely, but I imagine it's like everything else. It has to be in balance. I can imagine that if you can somehow be so full of antioxidants, then you can't even fight off a passing germ.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you'd be getting flus and things if it was a problem.
Sure.
It's sort of an obvious question, but it's very interesting to note here in terms of Dr. Pike and Darcy Spicer and John Daniels that they started up an interesting little company to sort of put into action this wonderful theory that they have. They have a company called Balance Pharmaceuticals. So, what is the motivation for these people? I mean, you know, now even synthetic hormones are being attacked in the newspaper now. Antioxidants are being attacked. What are they trying to sell?
Well, that woman who is going to fall for that, she's going to have a laboratory test done frequently. She's going to be constantly having to take medication. Every 3 months she has to have her loop run. You have a patient for life. You keep giving her these things until finally you kill her. What could be better? See, one of the problems with doing preventive health medicine is you find somebody's problem, you correct it, and then you never see them again because they stay well for the rest of their life. And doctors can't make much money doing that. But here you have someone who says, well, we're going to undertake your care forever. And it's going to be very lucrative, very expensive. So it's hard to believe that there isn't a profit motive in mind.
Well, the investors will make a lot of money.
Yep.
So in a way, there's really more money to be made not giving women replacement hormones. I mean, ironically, it seems like there's a switch now because, in fact, giving women replacement hormones, even if they're synthetic, if they work, that kind of takes them out of the doctor's office.
Right.
I'm being very cynical, but...
Well, yeah, if you're real cynical, like I tend to get once in a while after... trying to fight this for the last 10-12 years, is that for every mistake that the doctor makes in giving hormones, he makes money. He's rewarded for this. If he gives too much estrogen, he's going to create fibrocystic breast disease. He's going to create edema and obesity, and he has all these to treat. And then eventually he creates endometrial cancer, bad periods, and they have to have a hysterectomy, and then a oophorectomy, and then a mastectomy. It goes on and on and on. So if you believe that conditioning helps you to conditioning helps determine behavior like Pavlov's dogs, then by getting rewarded the way they are financially, it's difficult for them to change what they're doing. That's a pretty strong viewpoint, but I think that these aspects of it are true.
There's an arm, a sort of branch to this stuff that I think is worth mentioning here too, which is that women are having children later. Some women are having babies in their 20s, but there's a whole lot of women who decide to get pregnant in their late 30s, early 40s even. And some of these women have trouble getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two issues here. One is that what happens is that they often end up with fertility drugs, and I'm very frightened by these because it looks as though when you don't get pregnant, you get cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that issue. Excuse me. And there's also the issue of what causes women to become infertile later, and I think it goes back to what you were saying before, but why don't you talk about your patients and your experience?
Right. My experience, it's what the doctors call luteal phase failure. The luteal phase is the second half of the month from ovulation until just before you have your period. And it's during that time that progesterone is dominant, and progesterone is absolutely necessary for a fertilized egg to survive. And in fact, that's why it has the name, becoming pregnant, is called gestation. From fertilization until having the baby is the gestation time. This is the progestation hormone. So these women are making, their ovaries are functioning well enough to produce an egg very often, but they do not make the progesterone after ovulation in the amounts necessary to maintain the life of that egg, let alone the life of the egg once it's fertilized. And so they will have early miscarriages, or they're not even aware that they were pregnant before they lose it. And when these people call me, or if they, the ones I saw before I retired, I would tell them that we can measure their progesterone and we can see that how it is, and if they fall, then we say, why don't we add real progesterone at the time when your body needs it? And lo and behold, woman after woman after woman was able to carry their baby just fine.
So when are they taking the progesterone?
Well, they wait till ovulation time, and then they take a normal physiological dose, like 15 or 20 milligrams a day. And then if they think they might be pregnant, I recommend that they use a blood test, because blood tests are reliable 72 hours after conception. And if they have that, then we know the body normally would about double the progesterone, so they can start using it twice a day. And then by the second month, they can go up to three times a day with a 15 or 20 milligram dose. And after the third month, then the placenta takes over and starts making more and more progesterone. And it makes as much, in the last 3 months of pregnancy, it's making 350 to 400 milligrams a day.
No wonder women feel good during pregnancy.
Yes, and they're calm, and they can put up with things, and it's a fantastic thing that happens. It shows the great safety range of progesterone. But it's an amazingly simple process to do, and I have a wall here on the right side of my desk covered with pictures of babies that were born to women who had been told, after $20,000 of fertility work, they were told they could never have babies. And now they have. They know what to do.
One question is, you said you do a blood test to test what now?
Oh, you can do a blood test for pregnancy.
Oh, to see if you're pregnant?
Yeah.
Oh, instead of...
Yeah, because if you're not pregnant, then you want to stop the progesterone so you can have your period and try again the next month.
It's very important that you said that the replacement dose of progesterone is as low as 15 to 20 milligrams.
Oh, yeah.
Even 10 for some women.
Oh, of course.
Because women, you know, when they buy the over-the-counter progesterone products, and often they'll say to me, but Dr. Lee recommends this one, because they're confused. You happen to mention that there are some that actually have progesterone in them because they've been tested. So they think you've recommended it. And the supplier of the cream is saying use half a teaspoon twice a day or something, which is like 120 milligrams of progesterone, 80 milligrams.
I know. I keep writing letters to the suppliers.
Oh, God. So it, in some cases, in some of the brands, we're looking at as little as an eighth of a teaspoon a day.
Well, there again, see, they've lost their way. Well, yes, but the ones that want you to take a lot or want women to take a lot, they're not deliberately evil people. What they're doing is that they got lost along the way because somewhere they checked the blood level.
Yeah.
And the real hormone doesn't circulate in the watery part of the blood. It circulates mostly in red blood cell membranes. So when the doctor orders a blood test, the laboratory uses the serum, which is the watery part of the blood, and it's the wrong part. They're looking in the wrong place in the blood.
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot. David, women are currently, there's a lot of stuff now about women making decisions about whether to replace hormones after after menopause and worried about cancer, because the understanding is that if you take any hormones at all, synthetic or natural, you're raising your risk of cancer. So as a cancer researcher and as someone who does saliva testing, what kind of information do you want women to have in terms of making a decision about replacing their hormones?
Well, I agree with John and synthetic hormones are not the answer. The natural, if you're going to replace hormones, I think you should replace hormones with the natural hormones. If you replace with an estrogen, you should always balance it with progesterone. And some people, like women who've had complete hysterectomies, are going to need a little bit of androgen in addition to the estrogen. And
well, a lot of women through menopause do.
Yeah, and support the adrenal glands if you've been under excessive stress with a number of different things.
But what do you tell women who are afraid of cancer?
Well, my concept on that is that estrogen, any of the estrogens in the right amount, are not a problem as long as it's balanced with progesterone. And you can tell if you look at symptoms. You've got fibrocystic breast, you've got water retention, you have all the symptoms of estrogen dominance, then you've got too much estrogen relative to progesterone. If things are balanced, then you're going to be feeling good, and you're not going to have those kinds of problems.
But David, don't you agree that not all estrogens are equally dangerous as far as
estriol is the safest estrogen, and if you can replace with that and get rid of the estrogen type of deficiency symptoms, that's the way to go, absolutely.
Or a bi-estrogen where you're using estriol in a greater quantity with a tiny amount
sure.
of estradiol.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't think that the estrogens and part of, you know, what we call in the book the estrogen, the angel of life and the angel of death. I think the estrogen always stays the angel of life, and it's beneficial if you're taking that as long as it's balanced with natural progesterone. And I think the best way to balance it is to use the progesterone topically, because I just don't see that taking it orally that you're getting enough progesterone in your body to be protective of the breast, because most of it is turning into metabolites that are going to cause some adverse side effects
if you take it orally.
Yeah.
You take it orally, yes.
Yeah, and John, there are people who give progesterone under the tongue, and you don't like that so much for good reason.
Right. We've done some tests, and it shows that on these under-the-tongue ones, you get a very high peak of progesterone for a short period of time, just 2 or 3 or 4 hours, and then you have the rest of the day when you're...
The problem with that is that you get this bolus, this huge influx of progesterone. And really what you want to do is take advantage of your skin and fat under your skin. And, you know, they have estrogen patches. Well, your body, when you put progesterone on your skin, it acts like a patch. It slowly delivers the progesterone into your body, and that's a nice way of delivering it. It's over, you know, it delivers it over a 12 to 24-hour period, and it's a gradual increase in the progesterone level.
Well, but doctors often say, oh, it's going to rub off on your clothes, but that's not my experience. It goes in pretty rapidly.
Well, the progesterone passes through the outer skin very rapidly, but then into the body fat, and then slowly picked up by the capillaries that go through the body.
Right.
Should natural progesterone be applied directly to the breast?
Oh, it can, yes. That's a perfectly fine place.
And shouldn't estrogen also go through the skin because of the metabolites formed orally?
It actually probably goes through faster.
My experience is
a problem I've seen with some people using transdermal estrogens is that you get too much in too fast, and it's more difficult to control it like that. You get this big bolus of estrogen going in, and it hypersensitizes the brain and probably desensitizes it too. And then I've seen people with really high salivary levels of estrogens that have all the symptoms of estrogen deficiency, but on the other side, they have fibrocystic breast, they have all sorts of estrogen dominant symptoms at the same time. So it's
So what are you recommending about then? What are you saying?
I don't know, John. What is your clinical experience?
Well, some of the new patches that they have are built with a honeycomb kind of structure in the middle, so you can actually cut the patches in half or quarters, and you can get them. See, the initial patches had way too much estrogen because they had no idea how well it was absorbed.
Right.
And so bit by bit over the years, I wrote letters to the companies initially saying that this is way too high. My patients all getting fibrocystic breast disease and gaining weight. And gradually they've reduced the amount in the patch, and they're getting better. So now if you find the lowest dose patch and cut it in half. It's not bad.
Yeah.
But can you get natural estrogen that way?
Oh, yes, it's estradiol.
They can do it. You know, because I don't like using estradiol, so
no,
I have
a... No, I don't either, but that's the one they have. But if you take it in low doses and you have the right amount of progesterone with it,
it's fine.
I have to say, you know, since I'm a woman and I'm menopausal, I use a bioestrogen through the skin, and I've had no problem with spikes. I mean, I have the saliva tests, and so I may be that there's something else going on. But
everybody's different in how they metabolize.
Right.
If you metabolize it fast, then you will have more of a problem.
Okay.
And if you're a person who says, oh, I'm sensitive to everything, I just need a tiny little bit of aspirin or whatever, you're going to have more problems with your hormones probably.
So then they need a patch or a pill, huh?
You're just going to have more problems because your body can't clear them as fast. And I've
and that's
also
liver.
Seen a lot of people on things like benzodiazepine, clonopin type drugs that have all sorts of problems in trying to regulate their hormones. It's very difficult.
I bet. Antidepressants. Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but we could talk forever about this stuff.
Mm.
But yes, it sounds like the liver has to be addressed. People's livers have to be looked at, and you know, using things like phosphatidylcholine and Silymarin, and just a good healthy diet and lack of stress. So anyway, and there goes your rooster again.
Lots of fiber.
Fiber. Okay. Well, vegetables are fiber. Food are fiber. Okay. We're completely out of time. David Zava, your website is again.
They can go to salivatest.com.
www.salivatest.com.
Right.
And John Lee does not want to be called unless you happen to figure out where he is.
Well, I do have a website.
Okay, website.
Yeah, right. And it's just johnleemd.com, www.johnleemd.com. And my co-author screens all this for me, and the things that she feels I have to answer, she'll send to me.
johnleemd.com.
Yep.
And salivatest.com. Thank you, John Lee and David Zava, Z-A-V-A, from Z as in Zebra, RT Labs. You've both been very helpful. I'm sure we've cleared a lot of the cobwebs out of people's heads here about this stuff. So we'll talk to you soon again.
Great.
Bye, guys.
Take care.
Okay. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, if you missed part of today's show and want to get a tape, and yes, I did talk about prostate cancer a little bit, so I may have to add that to the title. Call the information number 24 hours a day at 707-773-4727, 707-773-4727. You go to the website for this information. If you hate my URL, don't use it. Go to www.kpfa.org and follow the links to your own health and fitness. That's another way to get to my website. For those who have an easy time, it's delete www, type in members.aol.com/YOHAF, your own health and fitness. Next week, a rebroadcast of a show I did about reviewing medical research, because it seems very timely after this show. So next week, listen in for reviewing medical research. I'm Lena Berman. You've been listening to Your Own Health and Fitness, produced live in the studios of listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio. May it live forever, KPFA FM, Berkeley, California.